folks. What happens when a major public crime goes unpunished? They do it again. It's not actually that complicated. In so many instances in our recent history, the attack on us has not only not been confronted and dealt with and defeated, it just sort of quietly gets incorporated into our understanding of the world at large. Like COVID-19, it's just sort of, yeah, it's just been established. That's just what the government can do when they can do it, and you just have to take it, and that's just how it is. Black Lives Matter. Yeah, they rioted for a while, but they stopped rioting eventually, but the networks never got broken up. The funding mechanisms never got severed. The underlying lie about all of it was never, you know, dealt with by conservative media. It was all sort of undercut and waffled about. So what do you think is going to happen? They're going to do it again. And they're already doing it again. This time, the excuse is a police killing in Madison, Wisconsin, where a man with a knife attacked police officers and died as a consequence. But it doesn't matter whether the killing or the death is legitimate or fraudulent. None of that matters. They have the power. They will use it. Friend of the show, Carlin Borashenko, is reporting on this. Here's a video from her. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Carlin B.
So for everyone who didn't believe me that Madison, Wisconsin was going to pop off with a BLM riot in response to the police shooting last week, just like Minneapolis, Minnesota did back in 2020 with George Floyd, I'm going to provide you with absolute proof that activists from Minnesota are passing the torch to Madison, Wisconsin. Let's get into it. I'm Carlin Borashenko. I'm an analyst and independent journalist covering the far left in America. So yesterday on my X account, which is DrKarlyn, the letter B, Dr. Carlin B, I posted this video that was posted by activists in Madison, Wisconsin, just showing what they're doing in the city. It's got videos like this where they're taking over busy streets, shutting down traffic, trying to shut down multiple local businesses, doing the BLM fist in the air. Hundreds and hundreds of activists did this the other night in Madison, Wisconsin, but it gets even better than that. I want to take you back to 2020, George Floyd Square, Minneapolis, Minnesota, where they erected a giant Black Lives Matter fist statue. Do you guys remember this? You can just look it up. Just look up BLM fist statue in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and you will see the evidence of this. This is from 6 years ago. Guess what? In that video from Madison, Wisconsin, this is the same BLM fist statue. Here's another view of it. So what has happened is the Antifa activists in Minneapolis actually shipped this BLM fist statue from George Floyd Square in Minneapolis into Madison, Wisconsin. This is the same statue that was in Minnesota back during the George Floyd riots in 2020. And the artist that created this statue, is going to be showing up in Madison, Wisconsin this week. Additionally, Antifa activists in Minnesota are actually going through and re-releasing the propaganda they created in 2020. You can see this is from Twin Cities Ungovernable, that is Antifa in Minnesota, saying, bringing this back from the 2020 archives because it looks like it might be that time again soon. It is a whole guide for how to do protesting and rioting just like they did in 2020. So all of the on-the-ground evidence is showing us Minneapolis is passing the torch to Madison, Wisconsin, and there are currently far-left activists from all over the region that are planning on heading to Madison to continue to escalate the situation. They're planning on getting violent and confrontational with the police, and they have their own little autonomous zone in the middle of the city. So we're going to continue to watch and see what happens. Follow along if you want the very best coverage of what is going on in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're doing it again. And why wouldn't they? Why the hell wouldn't they? Yeah, I got nothing to tell you. I'm going to open up the phone lines on the other side. Stay with us, folks. It's happening again.
Lord Vader, the rebellion is exposing your lies. We are the resistance, and we're taking down the Empire's deep state machine once and for all.
Get this guy off my screen. Can we go to clip 50? Clip 50. Guys, what's going on back there? All I wanted was clip 50. I sent it this morning. You should have had it. I'm not mad at the crew. I am not mad at the crew, but I am mad at you. Go to the alexjonesstore.com and make the purchase now.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this last hour. What is the number? 512-266-0642. That's 512-266-0642. Taking your calls, sort of about everything, sort of about just what we need to do, what will serve as our inflection point, for lack of a better word, our turning point, where we are no longer traveling down the path of inevitable destruction. What is going to be necessary? What is required for us to jump tracks to a new track where we are not headed at 100 miles an hour toward a brick wall or off of a cliff? Because I don't know. Because I would have thought literally any of these things would be enough. I would think 512-266-0642. Let me read some headlines for you. May give some color and detail to my blackpilling from Steve Ferguson. The births of anchor babies now outpaces deportations. The number of anchor babies, the number of illegal immigrants coming to America and having children that automatically become citizens in this country, is higher than the number of people we are deporting. So, let you know how that effort is going. Thanks, Republicans. Well done. Congressman Van Drew raises concerns over 75,000 non-citizens summoned for jury duty in New Jersey each year. 75,000 illegal aliens were summoned for jury duty. So, I assume that means they're registered to vote at the very least. I also wonder how many of them served on a jury. How is that legal? I wonder if you could throw out all of the convictions on a jury that had an illegal immigrant. Jury of your peers, or, you know, whoever. A jury of, like, whatever, criminals and stuff. Pretty sure that's what our Constitution calls for. And, you know, like some of these, a lot of these problems are not problems. They're situations that we choose to be in. Like, what I mean is they aren't natural, real problems. They are deliberately created on purpose. They could be easily solved if we felt like solving it. The open border would be the perfect example. I mean, it was closed with one order from Donald Trump. Now it's not closed fully, but clearly the difference between now and when Biden was in office is a very big difference. Absolutely nothing had to change. No bill had to be passed. No money had to be raised. All that had to happen was a decision. Flipping a switch from here to there. That was it, and it was done. So that's like most of our problems in this country. Easily, imminently solved. It's actually harder not to solve them. You actually have to do a lot of work and spend a lot of money to trick the American people into hiring DAs that have been propagandized through your, you know, education system to believe that criminals are the side they should be empathizing with, get them elected to an office so they can let the criminals out over and over again. You have to actually try to do that. The way our systems are set up, the cops will find the criminals, they'll arrest them, they'll give them over to the prosecutor will prosecute them, the judge will sentence them. That's the way our system is set up. You don't actually need to intervene. It just works that way. If you don't want that to happen, if you would rather have Shiloh Hendricks thrown in jail for saying the N-word while somebody with 75 felony convictions is walking around free because he's mentally ill. Like, you have to work hard to do that. You have to actively intervene and destroy our system to achieve that. That takes a lot of work. We literally have to do nothing to get back on track. But if we wanted to exert just the minimal amount of effort, things would easily be fixed up. Like, homelessness would be another situation. They spent $3 billion in California recently to lower homelessness. Homelessness rose by 3%. So they spent about $1 billion per percentage point. They raised homelessness. Seems like an inefficient use of money, first of all, but in that case, literally doing nothing would probably be better. They spent $3 billion and raised the homelessness rate. What if they didn't spend any money? The homeless rate might actually go down. We don't know. But that's where we're at. That's the vast majority of the situations in our country. They take active, whatever the opposite of maintenance is, right? Active degradation, active subversion for this stuff not to work. And there are, you know, some good examples of this. But the reason I want to bring this up is because I was thinking about the Shiloh Hendricks case. And to remind you, so Shiloh Hendricks is on video being goaded, being taunted by a Somalian man who's filming her and saying, say the N-word, because he knows that he has the power in the situation. Right? I don't know if you remember at the time I wrote this whole story where it was like, you got to understand the power dynamics at play here. And for some reason, people are incapable of seeing this for themselves. Maybe if they saw it in a different form, maybe if what they saw was a native African woman being abused and taunted and threatened by an English imperial officer, they would understand, right? They would understand the sentiment of a man with power over the native person, flaunting it, taunting them. Say it, say the word, knowing that he'll ruin their lives for saying it. The arrogance, the superiority of this foreign scumbag from a failed state. But he knows that the media will crucify her if she says a naughty word. And he knows that he can film her saying that, be seen as a hero for destroying a white woman's life, for daring to violate the sacred minority rights in this country. And he succeeds, and she has to actually go to court and defend herself. It's crazy that we live in this world, especially because the guy filming her, the guy taunting her, and now she's been declared guilty for taunting this guy. She's been declared guilty of a speech violation for disrupting the peace, for confronting this dude who was following her around with the camera, demanding she say something. She says it. She's like, leave me alone. I'll say it. I'm not scared. She was convicted of that. Now, she wasn't convicted of saying anything to the little kid, who it turns out was not 5 years old. He was 9 years old. He wears a police. I mean, y'all seen the details, so you know. Here's a detail you may have forgotten. The person who filmed, the Somali person who was filming Shiloh Hendricks, was an accused rapist. Now, he was never convicted of rape. And so he was allowed to remain in the country. But then this event happened. He's actually now fled the country. He apparently is in Somalia, but God only knows if that's true, since we don't seem to be capable of keeping track of anything that could possibly benefit the American people. Why was he not convicted? Do you know? I know. He wasn't convicted because the girl that he and his friend kidnapped, imprisoned, and raped, let me repeat that, the 16-year-old girl who he kidnapped, locked in his trailer, stole her shoes so she couldn't escape, imprisoned her and sexually abused her with his friend, the child they did this to, did actually escape, did run away, did report it, did provide evidence. They had this case open and shut. They had the victim. They had the rape kit showing she'd been abused. They had the evidence, including her shoes at the trailer where he'd remove them deliberately to stop her from running. They had it all. Why wasn't he convicted? He wasn't convicted because he wasn't even tried. Why wasn't he tried? Because it took them something like 2 to 3 years to get around to it. So by the time they got around to prosecuting this obvious abuse, crime, rape, kidnapping of a 16-year-old, the 16-year-old girl had aged out of the foster care system. Oh, yeah, she was in the foster care system, too. So, right, they took this, like, they took an orphan child, kidnapped her, raped her, never suffered the consequences, never were brought to justice for that. Why? Because the 16-year-old had turned 18, no longer in foster care, had moved away, and just wanted to start her life over. In order to convict him, you would have had to ask this rape victim, several years later, come back to the town that you ran away from, come back to the place where you were abused, and go through this song and dance with your rapist to get him convicted. And she said, I'm not interested. It's been so long. I'm just moving on with my life. And frankly, who can blame her? No, the people I blame is the system. Why the hell does it take years to start the process of convicting somebody for rape? And in the meantime, the guy's walking around free. He's clearly not, you know, cowed by it. He's clearly not living in fear. He's out there filming white women, you know, yelling at them, demanding that they say things. So it was dismissed because our system is utterly broken. Because we can't bring charges to people within the years of them committing the crime. And so, you know, the only other option would be hold him until you can try him. And now it's like, oh, it's unconstitutional to imprison somebody for 2 years before you convict him. Okay, so you got to let him out on bail for the 2 or 3 years before you finally try him. By the time you're ready to try him, the victim has aged out and isn't interested in pursuing it anymore. This dude's just living in our country. A literal would have been convicted rapist. I just never bothered to charge him. Why is our system so utterly broken? Could it possibly be because we brought in a ton of dumbass criminal Somalis and have to babysit them continuously? Is that what it is? Maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Oh, that's a puzzler. I don't know. But you have things like this. From Austin Justice. If you want less homelessness, you have to punish homeless behavior. San Francisco's homeless population is down 22% since 2024. San Jose's homeless population is down 23% since 2019. Both cities did that by punishing people who refused to get help. Not really super aggressive policies. In San Jose, police simply cite you for trespassing after you turned down a shelter 3 times in 18 months. San Francisco opened a center where police bring people arrested for public intoxication, and they have to stay there until they're sober. Not super aggressive policies, yet even the most modest efforts make a massive difference. Austin, LA, Portland, and Seattle keep writing bigger checks for homeless services and keep getting more homelessness. Personal accountability and enforcing consequences makes all the difference. Yeah, this is what I mean, y'all. Like, you think homelessness is a problem? No, it's not. The problem is that nobody will let you deal with homelessness. The problem is that your government programs literally incentivize homelessness. That's the problem. Copy and paste with crime and murder and everything else. And in fact, I saw the crew pulled up that part about Lincoln, Nebraska. If y'all can bring that up again, it's a similar associated story. Total homicides in Lincoln, Nebraska in 2026 so far, zero. What did Lincoln do to fix its crime problem? 1, hired more police officers. 2, aggressively investigated and solved burglaries. 3, added dedicated psychiatric transports, freeing cops to do more patrols. 4, ramped up traffic enforcement and ran more stops, especially red lights and DUIs. 5, they went after small crimes. For example, they started towing cars that violated a new nuisance vehicle ordinance. They stopped murder by arresting petty criminals. Duh. Nobody starts with murder. Get the criminals off the street. They don't commit crimes. They're not committing crimes. They're not committing bigger and bigger crimes. They don't actually eventually get up to murder. You have to actually arrest them. You know what Lincoln, Nebraska didn't have to use? They didn't have to use flock cameras. They didn't have to have access to your personal cell phone to read your chat messages before they were sent. Did El Salvador clean up its murder problem by installing an inescapable digital panopticon to spy on its every citizen every minute of the day? Absolutely not. It did the very basic police work of arresting and imprisoning criminals. That's the solution. What the hell? What the hell are we doing? Why are we not just doing the most obvious basic crap? It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. Thousands of children and sponsors have now been arrested by ICE after tips to U.S. Migrant Agency. ORR shared more than 480,000 leads with ICE since January 2025, internal data showed. Migrant children are now spending an average of nearly 200 days in ORR custody, care of migrant children previously walled off from immigration enforcement. This tells a story there. Among the more than 12,000 people arrested by U.S. immigration authorities following tips from the Office of Refugee Resettlement during President Trump's second term, according to internal document data reviewed exclusively by Reuters, ORR was created in 1980 to resettle refugees fleeing war and persecution. Since the early 2000s, the agency has also been charged with housing unaccompanied migrant children arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border. The care for these children has historically been walled off from immigration enforcement. A 2008 law sought to ensure they were placed in the least restrictive setting and released from a detention as soon as safely possible, regardless of their sponsor's legal status. That meant migrant families could be reunited without fear of being targeted by ICE, even if they are in the country illegally. The Trump administration has taken a drastically different approach. Since January 2025, the data shows ORR has shared more than 460,000 leads with ICE about unaccompanied children, their sponsors, usually parents or other relatives, the additional household members, leaving them vulnerable to detention and deportation. Which, again, is just, you know, the whole thing about immigration. I mean, it's just most of the people that came across the border had the one app, like you have their cell phone information. You can identify them at any point. And of course, this is, I guess, supposed to make us feel good about the fact that we can't find the 400 whatever thousand children that the Biden administration sent off with strangers never to be seen again. Remember that? Hey, remember that? How that happened? All right, finally, I'm going to cover this. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear has demanded in a blunt letter sent to Senator Mitch McConnell and his staff that McConnell verbally address constituents and demonstrate his ability to serve or resign his seat. Hey, that's what I said. That's exactly what I said yesterday. Like, you got to resign, dude. You're either dead, in which case, admit it. You know, his family should admit it, and we should just let Thomas Massie take over. Or he's not dead. He's simply incapable of holding his office, in which case he should resign. So I'm telling you, it's literally exactly what I said yesterday. It's like, dude's got to resign. He really should just resign anyway. Like, even if he now provides proof of life, it's kind of too little too late. It's like, dude, clearly you're incapable of being a senator. What are we doing here? What are we doing? But it's funny that Beshear is like, you need to really prove you're alive. I mean, that's the translation there. He's like, you need to address your constituents, i.e., are you alive? If you're alive, you need to say so. Otherwise, we need to retire you like an old racehorse. We'll go to your phone calls in just a moment. Let's go first to this clip. Clip number four. See if you can identify the slight mistake this Canadian legislator, this politician from Canada, makes in his speech. Do you have the ear? Can you tell what's actually going on here? Let's watch clip number four.
That exceed the powers actually granted to those offices. Here's a more natural flowing version of that section that reads like a legislative speech rather than a series of short points. Madam Speaker, one of my concerns with this legislation is the potential gap.
Did you hear that? A legislature on the floor of Parliament in Canada, or whatever they have there. They have Parliament, right?
That exceed the powers actually.
Just accidentally read out the AI prompt in the middle of his speech. Or not the prompt necessarily, but the AI response. So in the middle of his speech, he's like, here's another version of that. That sounds more like a speech from a legislature than a list of talking points. You're not supposed to read that part. How much of this do you think is going on? Like, how much of our government is literally just AI? Does that matter? Do we care? Like, you tell me, if there was a politician who every public statement he made was written for him by AI, his every response to questions from constituents or the media was fed through AI, at a certain point, are they not just the meat vessel for the real politician who is the hive mind of the AI? And is that not extremely troubling? Like, how much of our government is literally just AI? Like, when a Democrat and a Republican debate, is it just ChatGPT arguing with ChatGPT? What are the implications of that, I wonder? Canadian politician actually reading out the LLM instructions. Yeah. We got a problem here. We got a pretty big problem to deal with here. Let's go out to your calls. I got time for a call before we go to commercial break. We'll go to Jefferson in Virginia first. Thanks for calling in. Jefferson, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Thanks for taking calls.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
What's on your mind?
Well, you mentioned that the Chinese were going to have an artificial sun by 2030 to create unlimited energy for their people. And I just want to mention that I've been on this topic of free energy for about 2 years now and not making much headway in terms of getting people to actually take it serious. We here in the United States have solved the fusion riddle for more than two decades. We're not letting us know it, but Lockheed Martin has had free energy from fusion for at least 25 years. But everybody acts like, well, it's going to be classified and they're going to keep it secret, so we're just going to have to live without it. But there are alternatives to fusion. The hot fusion that we think of it as the big power producer. You know, Mike Adams was big on cold fusion, low energy nuclear reactions like 2 months ago. He was all hyped up about how that could be the bridge to the future. But then he doesn't talk about it much anymore. And then there was safe fission from liquid fluoride thorium reactors or molten salt reactors back in the 60s. They got shot down. So we never got the safe fission reactors either. We got the light water reactors like Three Mile Island, which could melt down. But instead of getting the fission reactors that could not melt down, the molten salt reactors, we got the ones that could. So on this energy issue, which drives the world entirely on hydrocarbon scarcity, that's all a false premise because we have essentially free energy or safe nuclear energy, but we won't let the public have it for some reason. And we never discuss this enough, even though energy is central to everything that's going wrong in the world right now.
You know, it's something that my dad always brings up that is it's always stuck with me is like, if you believe, and most people do, in nuclear weapons, then you understand and you can acknowledge that that explosion that we see occur is really the energy release of one atom, right? So that means that every atom in existence has that amount of potential energy. So you want to talk about free energy? We are literally surrounded by infinite energy, endless, infinite energy in every atom around us. On every pin, there's 50 million tiny little atoms that could power the whole world forever. Yeah, we're surrounded by free energy. We just aren't allowed to harness it.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I hope you support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com right now. The ultimate summer sale is on. You're getting massive discounts on things like Shilajit gummies, the Methylene Blue gummies. 30% off Methylene Blue capsules, colostrum, creatine powder, Shilajit gummies, turmeric gummies, and the CMOS capsules. 40% off Methylene Blue tincture. And we have a whole new lineup of Summer 26 limited edition collection clothes. And, you know, of course, our shirts are awesome. The designs are always awesome. But I really like some of the new stuff that we have because we have like swim trunks and shorts and, you know, button downs with little, you know, flag patches. Sort of more stuff than people who don't just want to, you know, buy or wear t-shirts. There's a little something for everybody at the Alex Jones store. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And we will go to as many calls as we can during this last segment here. Let's finish up with Jefferson since we got cut off there. But yeah, low energy nuclear reactors, I think, are a very good thing to pursue. I mean, do you think all of our problems now are just like downstream of the fear of nuclear energy? And if we had just pursued nuclear energy with abandon, we'd be in a different world right now. I mean, that's what it seems like to me, Jefferson.
Thank you. Yeah, the fear of fission was a psyop. You know, we had safe fission. We wouldn't acknowledge it. So we used the risky fission, and we suffered for it. But that was all basically to hide that they had other technologies they'd perfected. But the low-energy nuclear reactions are a cold fusion. That's good for boiling water. And you can use steam to turn turbines, and you create electricity from low-energy nuclear reactions. Great. You can, you know, run your city on electricity generated from steam. But that's not really the revolutionary discovery. The real thing is field reverse configuration. Aneutronic fusion has been perfected at Lockheed Martin, which means they can get direct electricity from a fusion reaction. They don't need to create steam. So your fusion reaction creates all the electricity you could possibly want automatically from the power plant that has the fusion reactor in it. So that's rather revolutionary that you don't need to go through the whole turbine thing.
And we wouldn't have to worry about the Strait of Hormuz being open either.
Right, but I'm just saying, like transformers, we have these huge transformers that can only be made in some place like Germany or something, even though our industry is going downhill. The transformer for the grid isn't necessary either. If you can have a safe fusion field reverse configuration reactor in your city, in your block, in your house, in wherever, they don't have to be that big. They talk about modular nuclear fission reactors being the solution to the data center power problem. But you don't know what's going to be in a data center. They could have a fusion reactor in there and not tell you. You're not going to have access to it. Trump just declared them national security defense infrastructure. So you're not going to get to inspect what's going on in data centers. They're going to hide the fusion from us unless we just make it obvious that we all know about it and we're not being fooled anymore. You can't lie to us forever. And we know that you're lying. And you know that we know you're lying. And when that just goes on forever on the energy front, we have to say, look, you have to reveal that we don't have to be dependent on oil. Oil is still a good thing. If we can pollute the environment and use free energy to clean it up, you can burn all the oil you want.
Well, so here's my question. What would stop a private individual or private corporation from just pursuing this stuff? I mean, you could do it in secret and then unveil it. And I mean, it's not like they could, they could stop you, I guess. But, you know, what would stop somebody from just marketing a small nuclear reactor like this right now?
Well, like thorium. Thorium isn't radioactive unless you hit it with a proton and it becomes uranium-233. But it's declared a nuclear entity by the Department of Energy, so they regulate it. So something that's not even radioactive is declared radioactive by the Department of Energy, so you can't use it for fission unless they let you. So you'll be breaking all kinds of laws when it comes to trying to make free energy commercial. They'll find some way to say it's a national security issue. Trump invested $6 billion in Tri-Alpha Energy, which is the aneutronic fusion reactor company that's probably the public-facing reveal mechanism to let people know that by 2032 or something, we'll have operating fusion reactors for the public. But that's going to be after the culling of 2030. So that's for only the 500 million that remain on the planet. That's not for you and me and your kids, right? So we've got to get on this. We've got to talk about energy every day and say, look, Trump, we know you talk about super weapons. I don't know what super weapons you've been told about that you don't know about that could be used to keep Americans safe, trying to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. But if we're having
obviously you're probably on my same level when it comes to the entire Iran war being, you know, utterly fake. But just taking it on the face value, is there not a chance that, like, in order to deal with the problems caused by the Strait of Hormuz, they might be forced to start, you know, taking advantage, start utilizing some of the free energy stuff? I mean, I don't know. Do you think there's any possibility that the energy crisis created by the Iran war somehow leads to them by necessity, you know, releasing some of the hidden free energy technology?
I would hope that's the best case scenario. I would hope that we would start using things like what's called the plasma field shield that they can create using the free energy fusion reactors to make the capacitors powerful enough to field the plasma shield, which would mean you don't have to have a missile interceptor missile. You can knock down missiles with the plasma shield. But he alluded to one ship that was attacked by 111 missiles, and they knocked all of them down, and he didn't say how, and he said he couldn't tell us how they were all knocked down, and he sort of winked at us when he said that that missile attack was defeated by something nobody had seen before. So he's hinting that we have these things. I don't know how much he knows about what we do and don't have, but if Americans are dying on the battlefield because we're keeping secret free energy weapons or scalar weapons, then he's guilty of killing these people that didn't need to die.
Yeah. Well, it is fascinating. And yeah, I mean, that, you know, the effect of energy and energy scarcity does define our world right now and certainly shake it up quite a bit if free energy was actually allowed to proliferate. I think we're getting to that point. I mean, I don't think it's going to be that long before some company or another. So that's the thing, you know, in order to keep something like that secret, you would require a authoritarian world order, right? Because some dude comes up with it. Sure, maybe in America it would come under regulations from a nuclear body or whatever, but why couldn't he just take it to another country with less controls and release it there? And I mean, it seems like if there really is available, possible, you know, consumer level free energy technology, it's going to get out one point or another, unless you have every single government in the world unified behind keeping it down, which is possible as well. What you mentioned there about the data centers, the Pentagon wants to build data centers. Congress would like a word. This is from Politico. Lawmakers are setting their sights on data centers proposed for military bases concerned about massive energy and water consumption. The DOD's leasing of land to private companies for artificial intelligence server farms is drawing bipartisan scrutiny from lawmakers worried about the impact on military installations and surrounding communities. The Pentagon is building data centers to supercharge its war tactics with drone swarms and other technologies powered by AI. Members of Congress, including a Republican appropriator, are trying to check that effort before it accelerates any further. So this is different even than the fact that they classified the privately owned data centers as military infrastructure. This is building dedicated military data centers with Pentagon money and oversight, which you really have to wonder how much access to our AI data grid is Israel going to get as a part of the merging of our two militaries, especially in the intelligence and, you know, technology level. And if they can get access to the technology for data centers, can they not get access to the information from data centers? So I'm extremely concerned about all of this. We also have this story, which I've been meaning to cover, from Hedgie Markets on X. AI companies are bulk buying rare books, scanning them through high-speed machines to cut the spines off, and shredding the originals. A service called ISBNDB facilitates orders of up to 1 million books and keeps buyers anonymous. Pre-2022 books are premium because they're free of AI-generated text. A federal judge ruled the practice is fair because eliminating the original means only one copy exists at a time. Anthropic hired the former head of Google Books Partnerships to obtain, quote, all the books in the world. They're literally trying to capture, scan, and then destroy physically every book in the world, which is just insane, especially because they don't need to. There is absolutely nothing about this process that requires the book being consumed. There are many scanning devices that do not require the book to be destroyed. Even if you do have to deconstruct the book, putting it back together is as simple as pasting on a new spine, rebinding it simply, or just putting it in a binder, right? Doesn't have to have the same cover, but you could cut off the cover, scan all the papers, and then just put it back into a binding. Not that complicated. They're choosing to destroy the books. They absolutely do not have to whatsoever. What they could do is they could create gigantic libraries if they wanted. That is what the industrialists of the past used to do on their own volition and in an act of noblesse oblige, general charity. People like Andrew Carnegie built incredible libraries that still exist as monuments to former American greatness to this day. Our current crop of magnates and monopolists don't seem to have that same character, do they? They are deliberately choosing to destroy all of the books they can get their hands on, the older, the better. I just, once again, just why do we let them? Why are we letting them? We don't have to. We can just say, you can't do that. Actually, you can't do that anymore. Hi, we're the American government. You're no longer allowed to buy every book in the world and burn it. What? Why do we allow this? Why are we allowing this? A bookseller told 404 Media that rare books almost with almost no surviving copies are being fed into this pipeline. Books that survived wars, fires, and centuries of handling are being shredded so an AI can learn to write a better marketing email. ISNDB's website literally says, quote, AI company destroys 2 million books is not a headline that generates sympathy. And they still built an entire business around making it happen quietly. They offer NDAs as a feature. They coach clients and call it digital preservation. I've covered AI companies scraping the internet, torrenting libraries, and stealing music. This is worse because it's irreversible. You can re-upload a website, you can reprint a bestseller, but you can't replace the last three copies of an 18th century botanical text once somebody shreds them for training data. And the judge says it's legal, so it's going to accelerate. We shred rare books and offer NDAs so nobody finds out is a legitimate business model in 2026. Yeah, I'm against this. This is one of those things that it's like, a new company is, entertaining people by throwing puppies into a wood chipper. I'm against that. That's bad. It's like, yeah, no, this is bad. This is just bad. I don't, what else is there to say about it? How many things do we cover where it's just like, here's another example of senseless, purposeless, evil, for absolutely no reason, that helps absolutely nobody, that's being done for no genuine cause whatsoever. By the way, I had a video yesterday, I don't think we have it here, but it's a guy who's helping to build, he's a contractor who's helping to build the data centers. He's walking around going, I don't think money's real anymore. The amount of money these people are spending on data centers is ridiculous. It is insane. Billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars being poured into data centers. How expensive do you think it would be to put the books in storage? You understand what I'm saying? There's no cost that is preventing them from keeping these books. It's not like, we can only afford to destroy the books. It would be too expensive to keep them. No, they could keep them. They got money for everything else. They're choosing not to. Imagine the type of person that comes up with this scheme and then implements it. Why? What do you think motivates them? Why do you think they're doing it? Do you think it's for the benefit of humanity? Are you an idiot? Are you a stupid retard who believes things the media says? Because they will tell you that this is being done out of necessity. They'll tell you there's no other way to do it. They'll tell you it is actually a good thing and nobody cares about these old books. I don't think you need to be told. I think you can think for yourself. These people are deliberately buying every old book they can find, and they're destroying it forever. And they're putting it on their own AI, easily manipulatable, impermanent, immaterial server farm somewhere. With billions of dollars, federal judge rules it's fair use for Anthropic to destroy books to feed its AI language models. Oh, you have that clip of the worker. All right, just before we do, just to finish up here, because we actually have an image. This is the magnificent library that Anthropic AI amassed before pulping it because it gave them a legal copyright loophole. These people do not understand civilization. And do you understand that the judge literally is saying you have to destroy the book? The judge is saying, if you copy the book, then that's copyright infringement because now two copies exist. But if you destroy the original, now only one copy exists, so that's okay. So it's not like they said it was okay to destroy the books. They actually say you're required to destroy the books. If you don't destroy them, then you're copyright infringement. Make it make sense, y'all. Make it make sense without resorting to the obvious conclusion that there's a bunch of psychotic monsters that are trying very desperately to destroy the very concept of human history so they can enslave the world. Like that, other than that, what other reason is there? I can't think of one. A note from Charlie, charliebecker.substack.com. I'm Charlie Becker, a second generation bookseller building an AI tool for used bookstores out of my family store in Houston. The newsletter is a one-man weekly magazine about my journey. We paused sales last week when we got a single online order for 70 books. It was so unprecedented, we actually had to call the smaller, slower marketplace platform it was placed on and ask, how do we ship all of this? Because they only gave us space for one tracking number, and these books wouldn't even fit into our biggest box. I'm coming to, about 2 weeks ago, my family noticed something very weird happening with our online sales. We sell on our own website and have a handful of online platforms, think Amazon, eBay, etc. On the slowest platform we use, one where we normally make the least sales, we had suddenly been selling at 20 times our normal rate for the week. Even stranger, about 95% of those orders were going to a single buyer who was having them shipped to a different location from where they were based. Most of our orders over the last 25 years selling online books have been one book, one buyer. You may sometimes get someone who buys a set or two or three books. More than that's kind of weird, kind of crazy. In the last week, every single order has been bigger than two or three books. We got one single order for 70 books. We paused all orders because we couldn't fulfill it and we didn't really know what was going on. About a week later, I noticed that on bookseller subreddits, Amazon seller forums, Twitter, and other places on the internet, other people were talking about the same thing happening. I'm not going to comment on whether it was the same buyer, who the buyer was, or where they're sending it because I don't want to break my terms of service or the websites I'm on. I can just tell you that our experience roughly resembles theirs. You can Google and find the names yourselves. What people kept noticing is that these books are going to larger than normal, going out in larger than normal shipments, and they're strange books. Stuff's like The Insider's Guide to Metro Denver from 1995, or How to Use Corel Word Perfect 1991. Just old books that people never normally buy, dead inventory. They're all being bought by one company and shipped to different locations than where that company is based. There are two possibilities. The theory that's taken off like wildfire on Twitter is that it's an AI company buying these books to scan them for purposes of creating more training data for the algorithm. My theory, which is a little more mundane, is that simple financial arbitrage. But no, I think it's the AI. No, I think it's AI. And I think as soon as one AI company decided they would do this, every other company wanted to get in on it as well. So they're literally, systematically, and massively, they're using AI to do it, right? I'm sure it's AI placing these orders, finding the books, talking to the stores. They're buying every book they can possibly get their hands on. They're destroying them on purpose. Meanwhile, this is the money they're spending on data centers. Let's watch.
You know, those of us who are working on AI data farms right now and seeing the amount of money and labor and investment into this, and then you talk to some of your contractor friends, and the budgets just aren't real. It's almost like the amount of money they're spending on AI farms, it's like money is not even real. If you know, if you're working on an AI farm, drop a comment below.
We're all probably curious just how much money is being spent on data centers. Well, let's just take a look at the big ones. So for the big ones, the hyperscale data centers, it costs about $2 billion to build one of these data centers. And those large multi-building campuses for the hyperscales, those are $2 billion to $5 billion each. So that is a huge amount of money. But what about all data centers nationwide? Well, here's the data for that. So it looks like about nationwide over the last 5 years, this is just over the last 5 years, about $150 billion has been spent just on the construction of data centers. And then when you take into account all the equipment and everything else that's been put into them, around $1 trillion. So that is money that most people can't even fathom.
But they can't afford to keep the books. I mean, you know, they have to destroy the books, though. It's too expensive to keep them, obviously. I would like somebody in the world to stop these civilizational arsonists and throw them all in prison. Let's go out to your calls now. Kristen in California, thank you for calling in. Thank you for holding. You are on the air, Kristen.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a famous quote of my dad's that I live by that I always remember. And it's that what you tolerate, you will encourage.
Mm.
So I don't know if we can do anything. I think they've set up a system so bulletproof for so many years before that it's like we're too tied. It's too tied up that we can't do anything. I don't know. I mean, I try and rack my brain with it too. And I don't know what the answer is. I have no clue. I think it's too set up for them. And it's been years in the making of them doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because it's like, even if you're like, okay, maybe the only, you know, if we can't fix it in the system, like, all right, maybe there needs to be like a revolution. Maybe there needs to be a violent overthrow. And it's like, how the hell would that work? How do you get five people together without the United States government, you know, treating you to the Waco treatment? Like, So it's not only just that, like, working within the system seems impossible. That's the real black pill, is you're like, man, even trying to figure out the most extreme, the most, you know, unrestricted method of correcting anything, it's like, I don't know, because it they basically have it to where a movement can't snowball. It's almost got to, like, start big, you know, because, you know, once it, like, starts moving, they cut it off and they end it. So I don't know. It's very troubling. And I guess the only thing we can really do with any certainty is just, like, prepare, right? Just, like, get prepared and don't give in, and just be ready to fight at some point, because that's going to happen at some point. And that might be because they try to draft you and throw you in a recruitment van, and that might be the point. The fighting starts, and maybe it all spirals out from there. But, you know, while we can't at this moment create the opportunity may yet arise in the future, and we need to be prepared to take advantage of it and capitalize on it the instant that it does. Take that for what it's worth. Thank you for the call, Chris. And let's go to Zane in Indiana now. Zane, you are on the air.
What's up, Harrison? How you doing, bro?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Hey, I just wanted to say I love your ultramethylene blue, and I've also tried out the Masterpiece zeolites. I love those. My daughter actually got lead poisoning from our old house.
Oh, wow.
So we're on that. She's fine now, so, like, it's all good, but we have her continuing on the zeolites just to get it flushed out.
Good.
So, anyways, I was just thinking, I just seen Alex talk about maybe in 3 weeks they got a draft. I'm 28 years old. I have three babies, three under three, bro. And I got to be honest, I'm a little bit nervous, and I think what you were saying, the first shot across the bow is going to be the point. And I don't know if they'd be well organized enough to stop all of us, man. Because look how much they've fumbled everything so far.
Yeah.
And I've heard, I'm a pretty religious viewer of Alex Jones, you, Sean Ryan, anybody who's making common sense. And so many people that I talk to, at least in our small town here, everyone's on the same page. Everyone sees the same thing. We're all hating the same thing. We've all been betrayed by this just Trump administration, and one after the other. People are just saying no. And it's like my mom, dude, where it's just this ultimate narcissist. And anybody with ears to hear and eyes to see can see it, other than these culties.
Yeah. Well, we got to try to shine the light and, you know, if nothing else, bring these people together so we can all understand universally that we're not alone, that we do actually have the numbers. We do actually have the power. We could actually do something if we ever felt like it, because the demoralization that keeps us trapped in impotency. See you tomorrow, folks.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you, Meta, Facebook is watching you, Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.